Meet Sven. He's very excited right now. Sven doesn't play poker, but he's still very excited. You see, Sven is a dealer for Porsche, and he's just found out that PokerStars players earn $7.5 million in VIP points every month. And with our all-inclusive program, that's enough to redeem 5 of the lovely pieces of German engineering every day. Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to leave other schemes, well, out of commission. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Annie Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's July 10th, 2009, and you're listening to the best poker podcast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
How's the jet lag treating you, buddy?
I have slept on and off for about 27 hours since I've been back.
It's funny, I'm getting like 2 hours here and 2 hours there, and I'm waking up at like 5 in the morning and saying, you know, raise, you know. It's pretty insane. I've never dealt with jet lag very well in the past anyway, but yeah, I'm just dragging today.
But yeah, we're back from Las Vegas, and happy to be back in our studio here. It's been like months,
It's been like 2 months since we've been in here. We missed it. The place hasn't changed at all.
Yeah,
that's good.
Yeah, just all kinds of crazy things aligned, and we've been doing a lot of shows from Skype. But no, we love the studio.
Yes, we're back at WDAE, the sports animal.
And, you know, here's the thing. We were hanging out in Vegas with a lot of people, right, Chris?
A lot of people.
And I was putting back some shots with Hand of the Week, and, you know, whistling at the girls with the hotline, and...
Well, you know what? I got bagged with a mailbag.
Did you?
Yeah, we were at the roulette wheel, and oh, man, we had a good time.
Well, I tell you, those guys all had a heck of a lot more fun than we did, and we had a good time, too.
And you know what, too? When we were on the strip, I saw Colombo busting a couple of hookers.
Oh, okay.
So he's been putting in some overtime, too.
Yeah. So anyhow, those guys are all just kind of sleeping it off this week, you know? They were like, come on, guys, let's go to the studio! And they're like, go without us. We're going to be fine here.
Green room is empty.
So we're going to go ahead and do this show without all of our regular friends this week.
Because we have so much to talk about anyway.
And that's the thing. We got a lot of good Vegas stories to talk about anyhow. So, but don't worry. We'll wake all those guys up next week and bring back all your favorites. And you might want to kind of inspire them to get out of bed by calling the hotline at 813-448-1120. Or emailing the mailbag at podcast@annieupmagazine.com. Tell those folks that you miss them.
Yes.
Tell them to get out of bed. Tell them to get back to the studio. Start working. Quit freeloading.
But it was a great trip. Some of the best stuff that we did out there was just hanging out with a lot of the Annie Up listeners, Annie Up Nation. Came out to play the World Series, came out to hang, and... you know, of course, we hung out with Lee Childs and Lauren Finkelstein, who won his seat in a charity tournament.
Yeah.
Did really well. Oh, we saw Tom Turley out there, guy, the pizza boy who sent us a pizza way back when we were at the Times.
Pizza boy.
Had a lot of fun with them at the Palm Restaurant at Caesars, and just had a great time with them. And then also, other players came out, too, for the meetup, but it wasn't a full meetup like it used to be, so it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. And, of course, we were out there, first and foremost... for the World Series of Poker.
Yep.
A little small tournament. It's gaining steam.
Yeah.
Eventually, people are going to know it.
Someone told me once that they passed $1 billion in prize money.
Wow.
So I guess it's pretty big.
Yeah, a billion. Yeah. Well, you know, somebody's got to brag about something, I guess. but yeah, so we got to hang out and rail a lot of our Annie Up Nationals, like you mentioned, and watched Gina Delk, too,
as a guest. Gina Delk.
And having a good run so far. And it was just kind of cool, as always, to you know, be able to get behind the ropes, you know, flash a little meaty badge, and
underneath.
Stand down,
rope.
Security guard. I belong here.
That's right. I'm inside the velvet rope. I'm one of the cool people. Stand back.
And we got to sweat some other people too. You got to talk to one Shannon Elizabeth.
I did. It was funny. I walked up to her and she had her sunglasses on. She's at the table, and I said, "Hey, Shannon. Is it true that you don't do interviews anymore?" And she said, "Who told you that?" And so we had this little back and forth thing. And then when I got up, all the guys came over to me and they're like, "Oh my God, what were you saying to Shannon Elizabeth?" I was like, I got our digits. What? Yeah, I got our digits, man. We're going out. And they're like, what? I'm like, duh. I said, I got an interview with her. Oh, okay. You know, they didn't believe me. You know, they thought I was trying to pick her up or something. I'm like, dude, I got a gold band on the hand. You know what I mean? I'm committed.
A gold band on the hand. See, I can't say that. Mine's silver.
Oh, yeah. See,
I got a silver sliver on my
silver
finger.
Silver sliver. How's that?
But yeah, so we got to sweat some folks. Lee Childs, Sutton watched him play a little bit too. Man, he's like so intent at the table, isn't he?
He's so intense. You get up to him, you're like, hey, Lee, how's it going?
On.
Yeah.
The bald head blinding you.
He's so focused too. You're standing right next to him. He doesn't even know it. You got to tap him on the shoulder, yeah. And then he turns around. He's like, oh, hey, you know. Get out of the zone, man. Just say hello. And yeah, but he I guess he made it day two. And then got short-stacked a little bit and then shoved it all in with, a king and went up against an ace and went out. But still, you know, it's good to make day two. It's good for the experience. And I'm sure he did a lot of networking and he had a couple of caches, too, during the series. So that's always good.
And his dad did, too.
Yeah, and his dad did, too. His dad is helping carry on the child's name quality poker play. So it was good.
And everybody we ran into, we said, hey, how you doing? And slapped him on the back, and...
they had a patch on.
Had a patch on. And they got a patch. And most of them loved to stay there, too. It was nice of them.
Yeah. some guys put it on their forehead. Some people put it on their chest. Some people put it on their arms. But I have a feeling you watched the World Series of Poker coverage come, what, when's it, September? When's it start? August?
Yeah, sometime. Sometime in the future.
You will see any patches on TV, most notably Tony Cousineau.
Yeah.
From Daytona Beach. We ran into him. Great guy. Incredibly positive. And he has the most caches of any World Series player in the history of the game without a bracelet.
Yeah.
And he's taking it in stride. He sort of has it like a badge of honor. And I said, well, speaking of wearing a badge of honor, will you wear our Annie a patch? And he's like, absolutely. You guys are giving me a subscription to this great magazine. I'll wear your patch. So the next day, I go looking for him. I can't find him. I'm like, where is Tony? So I go to the media room, and I'm like, where is Tony Cousineau? And they said, well, he's at seat one or whatever, you know, table 93. I said, okay, well, I'll go out there. I go to 93, and there's some European kid sitting there. I said, that is not Tony Cousineau. I know who he is. I interviewed him yesterday. So I go back, and they're like, well, maybe this table got broke. I said, it's 5 to 12. The table started at 12. They didn't break his table. So I can't find him, and I'm like, maybe he skipped. Maybe he voided out and is going to play the next day. Then I said, wait a minute. Maybe he's at the featured TV table. Sure enough, I go over there, bango, bango, bongo. On his arm is a patch, Annie Up Magazine, at the featured table, or the outside featured table. Yeah, they had two of them. And you know why he's at the featured table, Scott?
I'm guessing it has to do with the fact that he's wearing an Annie Up patch.
That's exactly it. They saw the patch and said, whoa, mister, you're too important to be out here in the, you know, Amazon distant
in the series class
boondocks.
Brazilian room.
Yes, we need to put you in front of the television. Give that nice little white and red black patch, you know, the viewership it deserves. So, of course, he's sitting at Phil Hellmuth's table that day.
Ah, yes.
How awesome is that? That you and I are like, you want to wear our patch? You know, we know it's a 1 in 3,000 chance that, you know, that player's going to get picked to be on TV, but could you wear our patch? And sure enough, Hellmuth's at his table. An hour later, after the first level or whatever, here he comes dressed as Julius Caesar.
Oh, great.
And I got this quick little funny story. I'm hoping that it happens, but I doubt it will. But Tony and I are sitting there, and I'm sweating him at the feature table. I'm sitting behind him talking to him because I'm writing an article about him. And he leans back and says, well, you know why I'm here? Because Phil Hellmuth's making his grand entrance, you know? And I said, yeah. I said, I hear that he's going to be dressed as Julius Caesar. Or somebody next to me says that. And I said, oh, my God, the last thing the world needs to see is Phil Hellmuth dressed in a toga. So we all giggled and had a little laugh at it, right? And then out of the corner of my eye, I noticed that the boom mic, the guy had come over with the boom mic from ESPN and had it between us and recorded the entire conversation. So who knows? I may be dissing Phil Hellmuth on national TV on day 1C. I don't know. It could happen. And it may not have been funny enough for them to put in the show. But you know how a lot of times they'll have like Norman Chad or Lama Karen will react to what someone says.
Yeah.
You know, so he didn't actually come in a toga, but man, his pasty white thighs blinded me when he walked in that gladiator uniform with the damn, you know. So, but yeah, that's what happened on that day. So the patch got a lot of airtime.
Yeah, and then the day before, our good friend Gina Delk, who was on the show, we caught up with her and she said, hey, you know, give me another patch. So we gave it to her. She slapped it on. Later that day, guess who gets moved to the TV table?
Sweet.
Gina Delk.
Yeah, we got a high percentage. For the amount of patches we gave out, we got a high percentage of TV time, if it actually works out that way.
And I know both Turley and Lauren said that the cameras were on them occasionally, so, you know, you never know.
You never know.
Never know.
Never know what's going to make the cut.
And we'd love to see all the NAM Nationals actually make it on TV, too. And it sounds like Turley had a hand where it might hold up for TV.
That's cool.
Pocket Ace is losing to Ace Queen.
That was really, really cool. But after 1C... they moved on to day 1D, and what a day 1D it was.
Yeah, I imagine most of our listeners have heard this already, but it's just astounding. Pretty early that morning, we hear, hey, the World Series sold out. With people in line.
And we've been saying it all week that we heard the last day was going to sell out. How do you not sign up the day before that, the day before that, you know? And most of the people got shut out live in Vegas.
Oh, my God. I mean, it's absolutely crazy. I mean, the first day, I think it drew somewhere in the neighborhood of 1,100. Second day, only 800 showed up for day 1B.
Yeah.
And then it started to pick up for day 3. And then, of course, day 4, 3,000 people, 800 people turned away. And that's exactly what I mean, one of the pros, and I'm not going to pick on him because he's a big guy, used to play football and can kick my ass even in his later ages, but T.J. Cloutier, that guy was on his scooter
every single
day we were out there, right? Whizzing around
all week.
How does he not register? How does he say, you know what? I gotta check out this booth at Pokerpalooza today. I don't have time to go put my $10,000 down for the biggest tournament of the year.
Blind you by the craps, my friend. Blind you by the craps.
Oh, my God. So, yeah, a couple other big pros, Patrick Antonius, and a couple others we thought did me in, but they eventually made it in. I think Huxley
eventually made it in.
But it's just insane.
You know, the funny thing about Huxley, too, is that he had won his seat free by winning the Heads-Up Championship.
Ah, okay.
And it's Caesars. So it's like, how do you shut out Huxley when you promised him the seat in your own tournament? And he actually got eaten. So I walked up to him because I wanted to say hello to him and introduce ourselves. And I was like, Huck, are you playing right now? And he said, well, I'm kind of getting screwed right now, so I'll see you later. So he was getting screwed. Right? At that point, he still wasn't in the tournament. People were playing. It's like level one's going by. He's running around trying to figure out how he's going to play, and somehow they got him in. But how foolish do you have to be to not make the tournament? Yeah. I mean, really.
So, yeah, so keep this in mind, little Andy Up Nationals. When you win your seat next year, and I know a lot of you will, don't wait to the last minute. Catch that first plane to Vegas, sign in, wire the money ahead of time.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, people were upset at the World Series. I mean, they only have so many tables.
I know.
There's not anything else they can do.
There's nothing they can do. I mean,
you had 800 people on day 1B. You had plenty of tables there that were going empty. They had crickets sitting on them.
Oh, my God. You know, it just makes you sick, you know. Oh, you know what, though? Speaking of making you sick, pardon my segue there, but Jack Lynx in the media room.
Yeah.
I mean,
Jack Lynx was everywhere.
Beef jerky everywhere. Oh, my God.
I got to say, I totally support the fact that beef jerky is the multi-year presenting sponsor of the World Series.
Oh, man.
I love me beef. But, you know, they had these new nugget things.
Yeah, the nuggets. That's what I wanted to get to.
And, you know, I love chicken. Chicken is a great animal to eat. But the chicken nuggets, not so good. Not so good. And same with beef jerky, turns out. When you nugget something.
Yeah.
Except maybe gold. Gold's probably still cool as a nugget.
Gold nuggets are good, but butt nuggets aren't good. You don't want those. But, you know, the thing about it was, you know, one day when I was there, I didn't have any breakfast. I think it was the day you were playing at the Grand. Scott played in the Grand, and that's a good story. But I didn't have anything to eat, because I'm used to going out to eat with you and having, like, the buffet or something. So I just get on the shuttle and go down to the Rio, and then I realize I didn't eat. All right, well, let me get some chicken jerky Jack Lynx beef nugget things. I had like two or three of them, and I just like, that is not what you want for breakfast. Because I was thinking, you know, protein, like eggs, you know, it'd be good. And don't eat jerky for breakfast, man.
I'm glad they finally moved the nuggets on and brought out the real jerky later on in the week. The real jerky is pretty darn good. But yeah, the nuggets aren't too good.
Yeah, not very good.
And, you know, we were very excited. We got invited over to the red carpet.
For the Annie Up for Africa.
Annie Up for Africa. We did not get a chance to ask Dan Cheadle why he took our name for his very worthy charity.
Yes.
But we did, you know, a lot of stretching the necks, trying to see who's coming down. Who's coming down the red carpet next? and probably the biggest draw, I had to think, was Sasquatch.
Sasquatch.
From Jack Lynx.
And, you know, you see him on TV. You think he's this huge guy. They call him Bigfoot for a reason. But he was shorter than me.
Well, you know, the camera adds, four or five feet and a bunch of fur. So you never know.
Man, and you know what the funny thing was? He walks up to you, and he actually starts talking to you. It's like, you're not supposed to talk, man. You're Sasquatch. He asked him a question. He's supposed to be like, arr. No, he starts saying, like, well, you know, no, don't talk to me. You're Sasquatch.
But, you know, he had those shifty eyes, too.
Yeah, it was kind of weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of weird.
I was a little scared.
Yeah.
A little scared.
Yeah.
He probably could have scared me into eating, actually buying Jack Links.
Oh, my God. Well, speaking of being scared on the red carpet, Mike Tyson walked by.
Yes.
And
Iron Mike.
Man, he got chubby. He got chubby.
Yeah,
all that muscle.
He let himself go that much, though. He's
still big.
He's a big chunk of beef jerky.
He was a big nugget.
Yeah.
But I thought to myself, oh, my God, Mike Tyson here. Does he actually play football? And I couldn't hear a word he was saying to the whoever was interviewing him.
Yeah, you generally can't.
Because he talks so quiet, you know? So I said, all right, I'm going to ask him a question. You know, so I started asking all these silly questions to people because I was like, I don't really care. I mean, interviewing poker players is all we do. So when they come by, it's like, yeah, I know, that's Andy Duke. See you later. But when Mike Tyson comes by, you got to ask him a silly question,
absolutely,
you know? So here's what I had to say to him.
So, Mike, what's worse, getting knocked out of a poker tournament or knocked out in the ring?
Well, I don't know. I haven't been knocked out yet in a poker tournament. Too.
Good luck today.
And you know what got funnier after that, Chris?
What was that?
And I never told you this. I looked at the entrance list for the NAF for Africa. They moved out.
Uh-huh.
Mike Tyson not among them.
He didn't play?
He didn't play.
Oh, my God. What a waste.
You know, unless maybe he was comped in and it wasn't part of the official list. But, you know, all the other celebrities were on there, so...
Well, your question was funnier.
Right. Yeah, you know,
but I didn't have the
Iron
balls
Mike,
to ask it. I did not.
I'm like, Iron Mike is coming on the red carpet. I'm like, Chris, because you were like on the front lines of the rope.
Right.
I was back in the back and the back benchers, you know. And I'm like, Chris, ask Mike how he scraped together the $5,000 to enter this thing. But no, Chicken Senza couldn't ask it.
No way, man.
No, he had to ask his little, knockout question instead.
I didn't want him to eat my children.
And it turns out the answer would have been, I didn't get the $5,000. I'm not playing. You know, but no one asked him that.
I had to dismantle him. That's what he said. But, you know, so I didn't want to get my ass dismantled. So I decided to just move on, and sure enough, Dean Cain is coming down.
Yeah, Superman.
Superman's coming down the red carpet, and I'm thinking, all right, I got the question for Superman.
Yeah, and my question was, can you give me Terry Hatch's phone number? And but no, you didn't ask that.
I have to ask, you know, it's because you're always having fun, I'm always doing business.
Okay.
So here's my business question for Dean Cain.
Hey, Dean.
Yes, sir.
Don't you think you have an unfair advantage today because you can see everyone's whole cards?
Yeah, I would be, but Annie wouldn't let me do that in this tournament, and we talked about it. I'm still a little ticked off. I'm going to sort of appeal to the judges before this starts because I thought this was a shoo-in, and now it's not so easy.
Do you play a lot of poker, really, though? Or
I play enough to be not ridiculous at the table, but I don't know that I'm really much of a threat when it comes to this little group. Give me the right cards, I'll be a threat.
Good luck today.
Thanks.
Yeah, pretty obvious question, I think, right? I mean, but you got to ask it. You got to see what he says. He was right on the spot with it, though. There was no delay. He knew what he had to say to that question. Imagine if you could see the cards.
Yeah, yeah.
That would be so awesome.
I tell you, when we do our team tournament, though, that's what I want. I want somebody with X-ray vision on my team because I think that would give us an edge.
All right, well, you were busting my chops about this, but I really wanted to get a good story with him, and it didn't work out that way because it was just a red carpet question,
right,
and they wouldn't let us talk to him afterward. But I really wanted to interview Matt Damon for, like, our Q&A in the magazine, you know, about how Rounders literally helped the poker boom because had, you know, Moneymaker not watched Rounders, he may not have played, and had he not played, he might not have won the satellite,
right.
So I wanted to ask him a bunch of questions. We were on the plane right over, and by the way, I kicked Scott's ass in Chinese poker on the way there.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, yeah. But you refused to play for money. Your loss.
It was my loss. So I wrote all these questions out on the plane, hoping I can ask all these questions to him, get him alone for 5 minutes, and that just wasn't going to happen.
But yeah, Matt Damon was not going to give you any more than one question.
No, one question. So the one question I asked him, well, here it is.
Hey, Matt, with all these serious questions being asked today, the most important question is, who would calculate pot odds better, Will Hunting or Mike McDermott?
Will would probably take him down a little bit. They'd both get him. Will would probably do it a little quicker.
Thanks.
All right, I got to give you props. That was a good question. I didn't have a better question to ask.
Oh, you were going to ask him, like, what, you know, what does Ben Affleck wear, for underwear when he goes
Sarah
to bed?
Sarah Silverman asked when he goes to bed, you know, because, you know, they had a thing together on YouTube.
It was funny, though, being on the red carpet, though. I was like, you know, the E! Online news reporter or something. Like, what are you wearing? What are you wearing? You know, I wanted to say stuff like that, but it was just, I felt so foolish.
All right, you know, and there's a little code of assumed ethics on the red carpet, all right?
Yeah.
Of course, a couple of us were shooting some photos for the fun. And actually, go to our Idiot Magazine Facebook fun page, fan page, and you will see some of the shots that... crappy shots that I shot from the red carpet, including a couple of you interviewing some folks. So,
yeah.
You know, kind of nice.
That's cool.
But one of them is, you know, when you're media, you don't ask for autographs. It's kind of tacky.
Yeah, no, you don't do that.
Kind of wrong.
You don't do that.
So at one point, now I'm sitting there, and, you know, we had the front row, two spots in the front row. I think it's probably because people thought, hey, Enneat Magazine, this is the magazine that's owned by Enneat for Africa or something.
Yeah.
But, you know, so people wanted our spots, and so all of a sudden this kid just was like, burst out of our way, running up. He's like, oh, Ben Affleck. And he's got his notebook and a pen, and he gets up there, and I thought he was going to ask him a question, right? No.
Ask him for his autograph.
So wrong.
I can't believe it.
So wrong.
And of all the people walking down that red carpet, it's Ben Affleck he goes crazy for. I'm like, what are you doing?
I don't know. I kind of go crazy for Ben Affleck.
No, you don't.
But not enough to, you know, can you sign my notebook, please? Thank you. You were great in Armageddon.
Well, you know, those were some of the interviews we did, but they were just fun, quick questions. They weren't real interviews. I did do a couple of interviews. Peter Eastgate was there signing chips, and I got one signed.
Okay.
Just because I was standing next to him. But I asked him a couple of questions. So I had an interview with him, and then right after that, I also saw Tony G.
Big guy.
The big guy.
He's not as big as you thought he is.
And no, he's bigger than I thought he was.
Yeah.
He's taller.
Right.
You thought he was fatter.
Yeah.
But I thought he was taller.
So he turned out
to be skinnier
and skinnier than we thought.
Yeah. So, he was a good interview, and so I'm going to play him back-to-back here. The first one is Peter Eastgate, you know, what it's like to be the world champion for a year. And then the other one is Tony G and how he selects his tirades and who he selects to put them on.
I just wanted to ask you how the year's been going, what it was like for you to be the champion this year.
Well, I've been a lot on the road. Like, I've been around to a lot of poker tournaments, both in Europe and in Australia as well, worldwide, basically.
Right.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. It's been a thrill.
Now, what kind of opportunities opened up for you because of this? Were there a lot of things that were exciting or of that nature?
Obviously, there's the freedom of having a lot of money,
yeah,
which means that you can do whatever you want. Then there's the sponsorship deal with PokerStars, which means that I'm playing all the EPTs. And as I said, I went to Australia as well to play an APPT.
Right.
So, yeah, you get getting into all these the tournaments worldwide, which is quite fun, and you get to see many parts of the world if you get out of the casino as well.
Does it get tougher for you now that everyone knows who you are? Obviously, you've always been a good player, and people may recognize you from online, things like that, but is it tougher for you now?
Well, yeah, it's tougher for me now, especially because over the last 1 or 2 years, the game has changed a little bit. Oh, it has changed a whole bit, and I haven't adjusted correctly to how the game has changed. Players are getting better, and I'm getting worse, so it's tougher for me to win.
Okay, how about how was it to play on high-stakes poker? Did you enjoy that?
I enjoyed that. Even though I didn't feel like I played my optimal game, I played close to the best I can, but... Like, after I saw the show, I didn't mind me being bluffed on several occasions. Like, I think my folds were good, but still, there was some other situations where I wished I would have played a little bit differently. And I wished I didn't buy in for $500,000, because then my decisions would have been a lot easier.
Yeah, right. Okay, anything else you want to tell me? Looking forward to the main event this year?
Yeah, the main event is always an extraordinary tournament. You have all the preliminary events, which are fun and cool. Then you have the main event, which is kind of so exclusive to the other events. And obviously, as I won it last year, I'm trying to defend the title, but that is like almost statistically impossible.
Right.
But it's a lot of fun to play poker, and especially the main event.
And PokerStars treat you real well?
I love my relationship with PokerStars right now.
Yeah, okay.
Remember Sven, our friendly Poker Stars Porsche dealer? Sven's still very excited. He already knows that Poker Stars players together earn enough VIP points to redeem 5 Porsches every day. What's made him a little more excited is the fact that 5 of our Poker Stars players have already claimed these lovely pieces of German engineering. Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to have left all the other schemes, well, stuck in neutral. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
All right, how are things going with Poker News?
Yeah, things are going really well with Poker News. I mean, we're doing the live coverage again, and I mean, our finger size is getting better and better technically, and I think our staff is getting better and better.
Okay.
I think we do a good job for the poker community, although it's a loss-making venture covering the World Series.
Really?
Yeah.
How?
No one can make money. It's very difficult to make money out of covering live.
Yeah, I'm sure. How are you playing today? I saw you in the field. How's it going?
Today's going well. I got up to about 75,000. I'm down to 55 now, but it's pretty good for the first few levels. I'm definitely in the top 10% of the field. So.
Want to tell me what Chip Me Up is all about?
Yeah, we started a new site called Chip Me Up.
Okay.
And that allows players to sell shares of themselves. And in main event, we had people like Eric Seidel sold a piece of himself, 20% of himself in a horse.
Wow.
Kathy Liebert sold 30% on the main event. I mean, I'm always there selling shares on my events.
Right.
But we've had big players like Phil Ivey that have been on there via auctions and all kinds of stuff. But it's more for staking, so players can list.
Okay.
It works like eBay. So it's, we don't take any percentage of the winnings. It's just about you list the event, and if, you pay a small fee for it.
Okay. Well, a lot of people know that you're very famous or infamous for getting bunches at a table and stuff. Can you tell me what goes through your head when you're playing with someone like that? Do you specifically target someone that you think might be weaker to a mental game or something like that? Or is it just always how you're feeling? Or how does that work out in your head?
Yeah, it's always different. You know, I did target pretty deep in a horse with like 15 players left. And we had a major conflict and ended up getting a penalty and he got very upset and he busted out. Unfortunately, I busted out too and lost a bit of concentration. But yeah, I mean, I would target the top players in very specific situations. I wouldn't target anyone that's not a big name, big ego player that's
right.
Willing to get into a mental game with me. And usually I come out on top. I mean, sometimes I can also come out on the wrong side of it. So it's a tricky thing, and I'm doing less and less on that. But
yeah, I've noticed that too as well. You're not doing it as much, at least on television when we see you.
Yeah.
Is that a conscious choice or is that just the way it's working out?
Just the way things are working out.
Okay.
I mean, I feel I need to do it. Not lose my own concentration, and people are used to it now too. So
yeah.
It's kind of an old trick. But if the opportunity is there, I'm always willing to open up the big mouth and the airbag and anything can pop out of it. So.
Very nice job. Very nice job.
Yeah,
you're the enterprising journalist out there. Poker Palooza.
Yeah, you know, it's not the same anymore, Scott. It's really not. You know, you start looking around, you're like, oh, I interviewed him already for the show. Oh, I interviewed.
Yeah.
You know, after 4 years of doing the show and going to the World Poker Tour and the World Series so many times that, you know, it's tough to find people that you haven't interviewed, really.
Well, you found a couple.
So I found a couple, so I was happy. World champion and on your bike, Russian. So that's his famous saying now, Tony G. But it was cool. We had a good time.
Yeah, and I tell you, it was pretty easy to pluck those few remaining pro interviews that we haven't got at Poker Palooza because that place was empty again.
Yes, what is up with that?
Why, you know, they totally redid the World Series of Poker Expo this year called Poker Palooza. They threw a lot of fun stuff. It was supposed to be this big, huge, re-energized event, and wah, wah, wah.
I'm renaming it Poker Palooza.
Yeah.
Because it was a loser. There was nothing really that exciting about it. There weren't that many booths, nothing that unique over the year before, that, and they decided to not funnel the people into it like they did the last time.
Terrible.
Used to make it so you couldn't go any, if you were coming out of the hotel at least, you couldn't go anywhere but through there to get to the main Amazon room. And now people can go any way they want, come in any way they want, and you're not showing up there. It was like half the time it was desolate.
Kind of
there's nobody there.
Now, give them credit, the one fun thing they did was introduce jousting. And sumo wrestling and a lot of other fun things. And I was all ready to take you down, partner.
Yeah.
And bark, 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 bark.
I was a chicken.
Bark, 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 bark.
I did not want to. It was a no-win situation for me.
Bark, 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 bark.
If I beat you, it's expected, and then you're bruised, and the business is suffering. And if I lose, I'm losing to a 5 foot nothing guy who I should beat his ass easily. So I had no win situation. That's why I just ignored you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm sure our listeners are sensing a trend in Cosenza on this show. Checking it out on Chinese Poker for Money.
Oh, man.
Checking it out asking Mike Tyson the tough questions. Chickened out on the joust and the sumo wrestling.
And chickened out on the chicken nuggets.
Yes, that's true. And chowed out on the chicken at the buffets.
But you're right. I did chicken out because I really did not want to be embarrassed or embarrass you. So I thought I'd save face for the company because I know you. You have one drink and that's it. The company just three sheets to the wind. So I had someone had to stand up and take charge. So that was me.
Well, you know, when we went out there, we were talking, oh, my God, we have so much to do. We have so many
we're not gonna play.
Business meetings and people to talk to. That are we even going to play any poker this trip? And turns out we ended up playing quite a bit, didn't we?
We played every single night. It was remarkable. I really thought we were going to be exhausted and not play. And sure enough, we're like, all right, what are we going to play now? It's 8 o'clock. We got 6 hours, 8 hours, 10 hours to go. What are we going to do? Played every night. But the best night, I mean, we had a lot of fun. We played a lot of listeners and stuff. But the best mixed game that we got to play in was at the IP. Now, you had alluded to this about a year or two ago.
Yeah, I think when we first started, we talked about it with the Imperial Palace is dealing a mixed game on Sunday nights. Starts at 7 o'clock. It's at 3-6. And it's not just horse games. They
awesome.
Push the level of creativity for games like Ocean Pineapple and
Ocean
Omaha
3-2-1. Yeah, Omaha 3-2-1, yeah.
And Badoosi, which is a combination of Badoogie and Deuce-7. And you know, we almost totally forgot about this on Sunday night. We were busy doing some of this stuff, but you made it over there, played a little bit. I closed down my table of Mirage and walked home. I'm like, Chris, you know, I'm going to go to bed. I'm a little tired. You know, I'm going to bank this $90 in profit that I took out of the Omaha game. And you're like, hey, seat open.
Seat open.
And I'm like, oh, man, what are you playing now? And it was something like Ace to five, high-low or something.
We were playing ace to five, high-low.
And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to regret it if I don't sit down and play these crazy games. Because I'm the one always calling double flop and Juarez in the home game.
Yep.
So I take that seat. And what happens, Chris?
You start losing.
In a matter of few minutes, that $90 that I clawed and scraped and bled
it was essentially gone.
To take out of the Mirage game was gone in a 3-6 carnival game. But a bunch of idiots have no idea what they're doing.
Yeah, these guys were so bad. All right, wait, listen, you have to understand, Antiup Nation, what this game is when we say Omaha 3-2-1. There are three flops, two turns, and one river. You can use any one of the flops and combine it with any one of the turns, and then you use the river to make your best hand. These guys were betting and raising and three betting when they had a wheel with like two of the boards paired. 147 diamonds on the board, and they thought their wheel was good. Now, so I'm laying down like six different boats. These guys are turning over ace through five for the winning hand. I was like, oh my God, we need to make an adjustment to these guys. They're terrible.
And we should say, too, it was Omaha high only, so it wasn't like they were free rolling on low.
Exactly. There was no low.
And I think the best moment, well, the two best moments were, one, you and I were talking, we're like, flush is never going to win this game. It's going to have to be at least a boat. You don't have a pair in your hand. Good luck winning this. And then I ended up taking down a pot with trip threes.
Trip threes. That was
it took the deal
sick.
About an hour to make sure. And I think he was as stunned as I was.
Trip threes. And you only had one in your hand.
And only one in my hand.
Oh, man.
But then my second favorite moment was I looked down at my massive stack of gray.
Wait. Oh, gray $1 chips.
$1 chips.
Yeah.
All seven of them left. Kicking myself for sitting down at this game. I was in the middle of an Omaha high-low hand. They actually played a normal game.
Yeah.
And ended up getting it all in with capped on like almost every street. And I turned over my cards and I said, nuts! And Chris's normal goes, oh my gosh. It's not the nuts.
It wasn't, too. It wasn't the nuts. And you, for capping it, five bets on each street with, like, the second nuts. And so obvious. And the thing about it, too, was really shocking was all you needed was Jack 10 or 9-10 or something to have the real nuts, which is a decent hand in Omaha. If you had, like, ace, deuce, 9-10, you might play it.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, 9-10 has to be out there. All he's capping. These guys are going to be quartering each other. They're idiots. sure enough, it turned over. Scott had like 6-7 or whatever it was, 6-8 or whatever. 6-9. And he had a straight.
And it held up.
No one had 6-9. No one had like 9-10 or whatever it was. And it wasn't the nuts, but it was good enough to take half the pot. You were all the way back to
$98.
$98.
Ended up losing $2
losing
on the
two bucks
in the game.
Night. That was awesome. I think I lost 11 in that game. And I won my money in Badoosie. That was kind of fun.
It's an interesting game.
Right away, I figured out that you just play deuce to seven and hope you make a Badoogie while you're in there.
It took me the entire time to figure out the opposite. I was trying to make a Badoogie and hoping I'd fall into a deuce to seven. That's how stupid I am.
Yeah, no, you don't want to do that. So that taught me my money because I lost a bunch early and then made my money back that way. But we didn't get to play the other ones like that Ocean Spray, whatever the hell that game was. But because they went to Raz right away. And I was like, no, let's put another game in there. And they're like, no. So I'll see you later. I'm going home. I'm not playing Raz at 3 in the morning.
Yeah.
You know,
after we'd played Raz enough on the rest of the trip.
Yeah, we played enough
and
Raz.
In fact, you know, we played Raz during the meager meetup we had when a couple folks came out. We stormed Caesars and realized they had a small list of interest
for a
horse game or mixed game.
Mixed game.
And so we had four of us, I think, four or five of us at the time. So we said, hey, put us on the list. They got the game going. Beautiful, right? 4-8.
You'd think.
We have a little discussion about the games. We decided just to make it easy, just make it horse, right?
Yeah, make it horse.
We play about a half an hour. It's good times, good times.
We had a lot of
competition.
Fun.
Then all of a sudden, a dealer shows up, or a floor shows up, and, hey guys, it's a time break.
Yeah, this
six
is where
every half hour.
This is where everything fell apart, and where I you know, and I you'll see if you guys followed me on Twitter. I bitched and moaned about the Venetian because they had the deep stack tournament going on and they didn't have enough chip runners. Then the dealers were terrible in the main room. So I was bitching and moaning about that. And I'm like, all right, cross Venetian off my list. I'm not going there for the rest of the trip. So then I go to Caesars and I'm like, all right, you got to like Caesars, right? It's the host of national championship.
Yeah. It's nice.
It heads up championship. It's a nice room. You know, they're going to deal this game for us. Well, you know, it turns out they put us at the table that doesn't have the automatic shuffler.
Right. Yep.
All of the other ones have an automatic shuffler. Then they say, well, it's a mixed game, so we know you're playing a lot of stud games, and the dealers are slow. So you got slow dealers hand dealing instead of, you know, hand shuffling, right. I mean, instead of having a shuffler. You're dealing a stud game, which has extra streets and takes much longer because more people are staying in and there's more betting. And then they come over and say, we're going to charge you $6 an hour for a half an hour for a 4-8 game?
Yeah.
I said, that's not right, man. We can't do this. So I call the floor over, and they're like, sorry, that's how it's done. And I'm like, you can't be the end-all, be-all. Right, and he's like, you know, like that scene in Clueless. As far as you're concerned, I'm the messiah of floor managers, pal, and this is what we're doing, $6 every half hour. So I said, well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to win the next spot and get the hell out of here. And sure enough, I played Raz, caught my, like, one-outer to make a 6-low, and took down, like, a $160 pot.
Racked your chips.
Racked my chips, said, see you guys, I'm leaving, I'm not
Chris
playing
Cassandra
here.
Left the building.
I left the building, and you didn't stay much longer.
No, I got out of there, too. It's unfortunate, because they had the same deal 2 years ago, I think, when we played out there, and I thought it was kind of ridiculous then. And I totally forgot about it, and then we started playing half an hour, and they were dropping rakes, so I'm like, hey, cool, and then all of a sudden they remembered.
Dropping rake, I just stayed all night.
Yep.
You know? And fortunately, I went down to the Mirage because I wanted to go out there and play No Limit Hold'em. And I get there, and there's a 3-6 horse list of interest. And it's like four guys on there. So I threw my name on there, played No Limit Hold'em. I actually had a nice hand No Limit Hold'em doubled up. So I had a nice little bankroll to go over to the... And they got the horse game going. It was like the greatest night of poker in my life. And not because I won money, but because I had so much fun with these guys. One guy was from England. He was hilarious. One guy was from Canada. Another guy was from Norway. And we convinced a dealer, instead of Raz, to deal deuce to seven.
Yes, very nice.
And even though we've called the floor over, and we called like all these different floor overs so we can get the right answer, but none of them would give us the answer saying they could do it. So finally we get this older guy who's been there a long time. He's like, I don't give a damn. I'll do whatever you want. What do you want? You want deuce or seven? All right, we're dealing. And I'm like, you don't care about the cameras on you and stuff? He's like, oh, they're not going to know what the hell's going on. I'll deal it for you. So he dealt deuce or seven for us. It was great. I took like 278 out of that game, and it was a 3-6 game. So that was a great night. We had a lot of fun. One guy, though, deuce or seven, I made a 10 on the second draw, and I had position on him, and he checked. So I bet... He called and drew two on the last draw.
Yeah,
I stood pat.
Nice.
I stood pat, and he made a 9.
Ooh.
I was like, you drew 2. How can you draw 2 on the last draw? You know, but we were joking around that way. I wasn't, you know, berating him. We were having fun. But it was great. It was a great time, and I was very disappointed in Caesars, so don't fall for it. Don't play the mixed game at Caesars, and don't sit there and pay $12 an hour to play a game. And you know the worst part? We started that table for them.
Yeah.
So we were literally giving them extra revenue. And that just ticked me off. So I was glad to win that big pot, get above my starting stack, and get the hell out of there.
Now, you seem to have a new favorite numerical card. Most people like the paint, but no.
You know, people have their favorite hands. You know, oh, I like Jack 10. I like, you know, 8-5 suited, whatever it is. My new favorite hand is anything with a 6. Any starting hand in Hold'em that has a 6 in it is my new favorite hand. I was down so much money to start this trip. It's not even funny. I was down almost $500, and I'm like, this is ridiculous. I need to start turning this around. So I played one hand. I played against a guy. I had 6-8 of hearts, and he raised. This is at the IP. So I called, and the flop comes 6-8-X. So I checked to him. He bets like 20, and I min-raise him to 40. So he calls. The turn is a 6. Now I've got my boat. Now I bet out like 50. And he goes, I can't fold this hand. And I only had like 40 left. I can't fold this hand, so I call, whatever it is. I said, you can't fold your hand, and I'm all in dark on the river. And he goes, well, I call. And he had aces. So I doubled up my 200 stack, whatever it was, to like 400. So now I'm back up, you know, almost back to, you know, $200. The next hand, I get like 5-6 of clubs, right? And I flop a flush, and I get another guy to go all in for another 100. All of a sudden, I've got like 500 in front of me, started with 100, you know? A few hands later, I get A6 of clubs, and I make another flush. And I'm like, three hands in a row that I played had a 6 in it, and I made my stack from 100 to like 600. It was just phenomenal. So any hand with a 6 in it, now I'm playing it no matter what. Home game, online. If I got a 6, I'm coming at you. It was pretty sweet.
Also sweet is the fact that the World Series brings out enough players that you can get something other than No Limit Hold'em.
Yes.
And I was able to play Omaha every single night.
And you played a big game, too, at the Venetian?
I got excited at the Venetian because I played the normal 4-8 with a half kill, which is a great game for me. You know, I like the 4-8, and it moves up to 6-12 with the kill, which is nice.
Yeah.
All right, so I played that a little bit, lost a little, unfortunately. Yeah, the only losing session I think I had. But then I get over to the Mirage one night, and wow, 5-10 Omaha 8 with a full kill.
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh, yeah, there's a seat open. I'm like, sweet. I sit down. Now, this is a game that's a little bit above my bankroll, particularly if you go to a full kill, then it's a 10-20.
Yeah.
And I remember you joking with me earlier when I saw 10-20 over at the Rio, and you're like, oh, great, you'll lose your money twice as fast. But I was impressed. I held my own in this game. I didn't lose. I actually won both sessions.
Now, why do you like the full kill so much? You always say that. You always love the full kill. What is it about the full kill?
Because it lets you play a little bit higher without always playing a little bit higher.
Okay.
So, I mean, 5-10 is a game I feel very comfortable in.
Okay.
So, you know, it gets the juices running a little bit more when it's, 10-20 every once in a while.
Okay. Okay. Now I understand. Because you were already saying that 5-10 was a little above your bankroll, and then all of a sudden you're playing a 5-10 full kill. I'm thinking, you're playing 10-20? Well, you got $100 on you, you know, whatever. So, I'm like, what are you doing? But I understand now. I understand why you like it so much.
But that was cool, and it gave me good practice for the one tournament I played this trip. You know, we've been going to Vegas for years. And, you know, Fast and I always talk about how when we go out to Vegas, we blow our money two ways. We enter a bunch of tournaments that we don't win.
Yeah.
And then we play games that we can't win, like the Omaha at Orleans against, like, you know, the 10 best Omaha players in the world. This time, I decided I'm playing one tournament. One tournament is all.
Smart.
And so I picked out the Grand Series is going out the Gold Nugget. And so they had an Omaha 8 event after their grand finale.
Right.
Really weird.
Right.
So I was excited, got down there and played it. They only got 72 players or so. But, you know, it's a good structure. 12,000 in chips, I think, to start with. 40-minute levels. And you start at quarter 50 cents.
Well, that'd be a real long time.
But it was a good tournament. Had a lot of fun. And but I tell you, Omaha brings out the fights.
Yeah.
You know, they could probably... They talk about how poker on TV is kind of boring if they don't do the, you know, the whole card cameras and cut it all up.
Yeah.
I swear to God, just put one camera on an Omaha Heat game, kind of like a nanny cam, and people would be paying $19.95 a month just to sit there and watch these guys fight.
Oh, my God. It'd be like Jerry, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah, I know it.
So my table was pretty cool, but the table right behind us, they had a fight every single hand. And the biggest one, I turned around and I looked over and I'm like, oh, my God. Because the first dealer I had in my tournament, turtles could deal faster than this guy.
Oh, man. That's the last thing you need.
I think I tweeted that if he was on the Benny Hill show, he'd be going at normal speed.
I saw that.
This guy was the worst deal I've ever seen. It took him forever to shuffle, and it's Omaha. You're going to be there for, oh, I think we got four hands in an hour, this guy. So I had absolutely no surprise when I turned around and saw he was dealing, figured he was at the root of it. And then my favorite line, because he's splitting up like a pot that like 19 people had a piece of.
Yeah.
And you can see he was just like, he was ready to bash his head in. He turns to the player, he's like, I'm doing it the way you want me to do it. And I don't know what exactly was going on, but one player went in to chop the stacks up differently. Oh, my God. But they had fights all day. I mean, I can't get over how much people get worked up at Omaha. But, you know, I made it halfway through, got down, got moved to a table. And, you know, when I walked in, they have a big, huge scoreboard of all the people that won all the events.
Yeah, the prior ones.
Nugget, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, I got to a couple minutes and I looked through and I'm like, oh my God, Frank Hollywood Henderson won the horse event just a couple days ago.
That's Faso's hero.
Now, if you remember back on the old show, the last time I think Faso went out to Vegas, he was ecstatic.
Yeah,
that he ran into Hollywood Henderson.
Following him all through the series.
Who was runner-up to Johnny Chan in 87 in the main event.
Yeah.
Actually got sucked out by Johnny Chan.
Yeah. One card away.
One. So Faso just reveled in everything in this guy.
Yep.
So I'm like, hey, Frank, is how I was going to call Faso before. So I get moved to a table. I'm in like the 5 seat. I look over at the 1 seat. And who's sitting there, Chris?
Alex Jacob?
Yes! And once I was able to look behind his huge hair, I found Frank Hollywood Henderson.
Frank Hollywood Henderson is sitting in the nest that is Alex Jacob's hair, playing Omaha from the high perch.
But no, you know, Frank Hollywood Henderson, C1, I get to play with Henderson.
That's awesome.
And I tell you, he was hilarious.
And he had that NBC Sports jacket on, like he always does.
And the guy at the table once goes, oh, man, I used to buy those jackets all the time. And, you know, this is before my time. So apparently they sold them and people got excited about them.
I guess so.
Before he looked at him, he's like, you don't got this one. And he turned around in the back. It's like Binion's Horseshoe, 1987. It's like, this is the jacket you get for being sucked out on by Johnny Chan.
Constant reminder that he was one hand away from being a world champion.
So then you showed up with our good friend Dave, who has been a big fan of the show, right?
And, yeah, big Dave from Ohio, who now lives in Vegas. Yep.
Check in to see how we were doing before you go over to Binion's Coffee Shop. Get your picture taken with the big old...
I did, too.
$1 million.
Did the whole tourist thing.
And you walk in and you go, Scott, that's Frank Henderson! I'm like, I know! Quiet! So I text you a little bit after that. I have Frank Henderson all in. He's on the ropes. And listen to this hand. I have ace, deuce, jack, jack. Flop comes jack, jack, 3-4.
No, it comes jack, 3-4.
Jack, jack, 3-4 would be better.
It would be better. But then it would be a bad flop because you did four cards and you'd be screwed. It came jack, 3-4.
Jack, 3-4, yes. All right. Can you imagine a better flop other than jack, jack, 3-4?
There is not a better flop than Jack 3-4, man, for that hand. That is awesome.
All right, I'm all in, too. The river is a heart. Or three hearts.
No.
And a low.
Oh,
so
no.
So at least my low gets there. But I was going to scoop into that last card, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So the other guy in the hand who had us both covered had hearts. But Hollywood turns over the nut hearts.
Nut hearts,
like,
yeah.
Ah! So, Chris, I was one card away.
From
eliminating the guy who was one card away from winning the main event of the World Series.
You're going to put that on your tombstone.
I'm a legend in my own mind. First line of my obit now.
First line in your obit. You know, what's funny, too, is now here is an argument for you to get back into watching poker on TV again. Because in the 10 seat, or in this case, 8 or 9 seat, you have no idea who it is. It's Frankie O'Dell, who won like the Borgata World Poker Tour main event a year ago or whatever, 2 years ago. And he won an Omaha bracelet. I mean, he's like one of the greatest Omaha players of all time. And you don't even know who he is, which I guess is good. I guess ignorance is bliss. But at this point, you probably should have known Frankie O'Dell is on your left, not just Frank Henderson on your right. You know? So I'm like texting you. I'm like, that's Frankie O'Dell. Yeah, I have no idea who that is. I'm like, well, you do now. You probably were like three betting this guy. You know, it's Frankie O'Dell. So who else is in this field that you didn't even know? You probably had a ton of people in the field you didn't know.
Yes, there were probably tons of people I didn't know. It turned out to be a pretty tough field because I think you texted me when I first started, and I'm like, probably in the top three at my table, and certainly wasn't in the top 30% of the field. I can guarantee you that. But it was a good run. I had fun, and I did outlast Hollywood. I did not get the pleasure of knocking him out, but I did outlast.
But you outlasted him.
So you know, hey.
So that means now you're Faso's hero.
That's right.
You know, because you outlasted Frank Henderson, so he has to now. And it's like the the associative property of what is that in algebra? You know. I don't know what the hell they call that.
All right, when we're out there, we always meet a couple characters, and you got to play with somebody that was kind of famous too.
Yeah, maybe a lot of people don't know him, but last year, Hal Lubarsky, the blind poker player, got a lot of coverage on ESPN. He went very deep in the main event, and they interviewed him. You know, those little segments about who, and then interviewed the people who also tell him the cards and stuff. And I ran to him a few times actually. Not because he was blind and walked into me, but I mean, I saw him in other rooms.
So wrong.
Well, you know what I mean. I ran into him a few times in other places, and he had...
You, sir, are a sightist.
Sightist. He had different, people telling him his cards, you know, throughout every time I saw him. But he was at my table. And it was funny. We walked into the Mirage for the first night. I saw him playing at a table, and I said, oh, that'd be kind of cool to play with Halabarski, see how good he is. And then when I sat down, he wasn't at my table, but like literally 3 hands later, he got moved to my table. And I thought that was weird because they didn't break his table. He just moved to my table. And I thought, I can't say he saw me coming, you know, and said he wanted me. So why did he move to my table? And I asked him, and he was just like, oh, no, I like to play over here. So I don't know what he said. But he was pretty, got felted early. Mm. And then, you know, Big Dave, I went to dinner with him. And he's like, I told him I play with Hal Lubarsky. And he says, you know, if I was the guy telling him the cards, I'd lie to him once in a while just to see how he'd play. And then, oh, I misread my hand.
You guys are terrible.
I didn't say it. He said
it. Absolutely terrible.
He said it. I couldn't believe he had said it. But really, Hal, then he got all his money back. Real good player. Real solid. And it was really a pleasure to watch him play and hang out with him. And that was kind of cool. It was really kind of cool.
And we ran into a number of what appeared to be bachelor parties this time.
Yes.
Doing very well. The one at Venetian. But you had even a more fun one.
This one's hilarious. These three guys show up, right? And they're like, all right, come on over. I'm going to buy in. Come on over. I'm going to buy in. He's at my table. It's the same table with Hal Lubarsky, by the way. So I'm like, what the hell's going on? Who is this kid? Who cares, you know? He goes, all right, you ready? And he pulls out a brick of 254 singles. They're all dollar bills. He's like, there's my buy-in right there. I'm buying in for 254. And they're like, what? And so actually it was he thought he had 252. So the lady comes over and she's like, I got to go run this through the machine. He goes, it's 252. Count it. It's 252. I'm telling you. And she says, I don't care what you tell me. I'm going to run this through the machine. And whatever the machine says is what I'm going to pay you. He's like, well, you're going to find it's 252. So she comes back and she goes, it wasn't 252. It was 254. Do you want these two chips or not? And he's like, yeah, you know. So, but the funny thing was, I said, so what are you, a stripper? And the whole table just laughed. So then he's like, no, the last time I was here, I promised myself that I would not spend a dollar bill. Whenever I got a dollar bill in change or somebody paid me a dollar bill, I would save it. And that was 2 months ago. 2 months later, I got 254 singles, and I'm buying in, baby. And they had a lot of fun. His buddy actually felted me. I had ace-king suited and limped to try to trap, and it limped all the way around. And then his buddy, actually, it limped all the way around to me, and then I knew this guy was kind of aggressive, and he raised, like, 20. So I shoved the rest of my, like, 80 in, and he had queens, and I didn't match up. So his buddy felted me, so they had a lot of fun with that, I'm sure, too. And then I went home, actually. That was when it was early in the stage, and I was down a bunch of money. But it was pretty funny. He pulls out this huge brick. It looks like one of those World Series bricks, except it was all singles. That's pretty funny.
I thought it was funny that I ran into a couple of people at this 5-10, 10-20 Omaha game.
Yeah.
We're learning the game.
Yeah.
Learning the game at those levels. I mean, it was great for my bankroll, but crazy. But one woman in particular started off my trip, and no one topped her in the character department on this trip. I sit down at the Venetian 4A game, and I literally had to wedge myself into my seat, Chris, because this woman had a Heineken in the drink holder.
Yeah.
All right, nothing wrong with that. You're playing cards, drinking beer, right?
Yeah, what the hell?
She had another Heineken on the actual table and one of those big bottles of Fiji water there, plus all of her chips. There was no room on the table for me. I couldn't see the flop over the minibar. And, you know, she's right next to me, and she's just, you know, some of these people, they just don't have any sense of personal space. When they're at the poker table, it's their table.
Yeah.
Their table. They put anything on it they want. They spread their chips out. They drape their arms over it and block you out like, you know, they're under the basket at the NBA Finals. And that's what this woman was doing. And, you know, she was drunk and annoying, and I was just getting pissed off. So then, you know, I'm going to pick on these kind of people.
Okay.
It just gets me worked up, right? I'm a nice guy. Yeah, at the table. But when these people... just show, hey, I don't care what I mean to anybody else. I'm going to look at things to pick at. All right, so let's start with the fact that she was a large woman.
Yeah.
We already know I have problems with that, even though I'm getting a little large myself.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But she was wearing sweats, and she had, like, a hole just above, like, the waist. All right, you know, I'm to her left, you know.
So you can see the hole.
And I have no space to really maneuver, so I'm, like, kind of stuck. So it's not like I was looking for anything. It's just that's where my eyes are allowed to go with the space that she was giving me.
If only the Idiot Nation can see you right now imitating how you're sitting at the table. It's hilarious. You're all squeezed up.
So I look down at her sweat, and she's got a hole in her shirt, and hair is growing out of it.
Oh, my God. That is so gross.
Oh, my God. I mean, I put in for a seat change. It never came. I'm like, oh. Please help me, Omaha gods. Get me out of this.
See, no, I would have said, what's its name? She would have said, what are you talking about? I'm like, your unborn twin that's peeking out from your shirt. That's what I would have said.
Just nasty. And then, you know, a little later, a cocktail waitress comes over, which were hard to find at the Venetian, by the way. I had to run one down just to steal a bottle of water
off.
That's
what I'm saying.
She comes over, and the woman's like, yeah, two Heinekens, please. So she orders them two at a time. So at one point during the table, she had three Heinekens. And I think she was surprised. She looked down, hey, I forgot about this one. Oh, terrible.
But I think you answered your own question because you said that you couldn't get a drink waitress over there.
Yeah,
so now
true.
You know why she's a regular, obviously, ordering two at a time.
Yeah. She was probably smarter.
I would have been like, Bic razor, please. Can I have a Bic razor, please? I want to shave this thing next to me. Jabba the Hutt playing poker. You know, oh man, that's insane! But now you know why I didn't like the Venetian. You combine all those things together, and you know, I'm not the only one who doesn't like the place.
Well, the one thing that she didn't do was speak a foreign language at the table. Something that you can't say that you did not do.
This is pretty funny. I played a lot at my own hotel, which is weird. I never envisioned that I was going to play at all at the IP. I ended up playing most of my poker at the Mirage and the IP.
Right.
So I'm sitting down at the table, and this is right after I'd won those big pots with the six in my hands. And this guy, little guy, shaved head, not shaved head, but like shaved close to his head, haircut, little guy, turns around and starts talking to one of his buddies behind him, but he's talking Italian. So I kind of smiled because I love speaking Italian when I can. I don't really speak it very well at all, but I just love hearing people speak it. I love the language. And so he looked at me and he asked me in Italian if I spoke Italian. So I told him in Italian a little bit. I speak a little bit, and he asked where my family was from. And so we had a little conversation. And sure enough, there's a guy on the other end of the table. Hey, English only at the table. And I'm like, I have never been accused of not speaking English. I mean, I couldn't even say anything. I couldn't even say, like, diamonds or hearts in Italian, you know what I mean? So I thought it was pretty damn funny that he said that to me. So anyway, I say goodbye to this guy. He shakes my hand. You know, he does the cool guy handshake, you know, not the regular standard business handshake. So I think nothing of it. But that was kind of cool. I got to talk to a guy from Italy, and he was, you know, a nice guy. So the next day, I'm at the World Series now, and I'm reporting or whatever I'm doing, and I see this guy coming at me, and he sees me, and he goes, ah, Cosenza, right? Does the cool guy handshake, but pulls me tight and does the kissing thing on each cheek. Kisses me on each cheek thing, and I'm like, oh, my God, what does this mean? You know, so then it turns out he's part of Team Italia. Right? The poker team that came from Italy with the blue shirts on, you know. Yeah. Next thing I know, he comes up to his buddies, and his buddies are all there in front of me, and they're like, this is Cosenza, and he starts telling me all this stuff about me, you know, because, oh, the press pass, and all of a sudden, I got 10 Italians doing the thing on my cheek, you know. I'm like, I'm getting all chafe on my cheeks. I'm like, what the hell is going on? They're all, and every time I saw him now, throughout the World Series, the rest of the week, when an Italian guy, they'd all do the thing kissing me on both cheeks. It was hilarious. Oh, man, it was unbelievable. And it was funny because they didn't really speak very good English. So they would try to speak to me in Italian. And, of course, I didn't speak very good Italian. So we were like these idiots trying to talk to each other. And I looked at him. I was like, so when I saw him in the main event, he does the whole thing again, you know. And he says, I said, how you doing? He goes, I have ace of queen and I raise. And then and he goes, his cita cuatro a re-raise, I fold. That's all he said to me. And I said, okay, well, your chip stack looks pretty good. It looks like you have about, and I said, 30 mil, you know, 30,000. And he's like, si, 30 mil. And I'm like, so you're about, you know, you're starting, it's still early, you know. And then he's like, all right, ciao, Cosenza. And then he sat down, and that was the last time I saw him. But really, I mean, you know, when you go to Vegas and you get kissed, you don't think it's going to be guys. You know what I mean?
That's true. And but it was definitely an amorous trip to Las Vegas. You know, the last time I went there, famously, I was violated in front of the IP. This time, I was walking home late from the Mirage.
Yeah.
Got propped not once, but twice on my walk home. Kind of giggled. The second one, though, was really funny because I was, you know, I was having a tough time with my contacts, so I was wearing my glasses. I was looking even geekier than I normally am.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was walking through the Harrah's Carnival Court, that annoying ass thing.
Yeah, yeah.
On my BlackBerry, texting Tom Turley. I couldn't have looked nerdier in the world. And this hooker was upset that I was not paying her any attention.
Well, duh. I mean, that's who they target, the guys who can't get laid. I mean, the guys who look nerdy, who aren't getting laid, they're like, obviously, I'm a hooker, and you don't get any, so and you got a BlackBerry, so you got some money. Come on over, you know? So, of course, they're insulted.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, right.
If you look nerdy and they're not getting any action from you, something's wrong. So they had a little self-esteem problem, which probably, you know, stemmed from the fact that their father didn't love them.
Next week on Dr. Chris.
I did have a hooker say hi to me as I was walking by. I didn't even look at her.
You were proud. You were upset that I was.
I'm like, why are
hookers talking all the attention?
I'm like, they're not talking to me. What the hell? Not that I wanted them to talk to me, but it was like, I can't believe it. I don't even know what a hooker looks like. The only reason why I knew what a hooker looked like in the first place was because I was having the scariest walk of my life after getting busted out in that mixed game at the MGM with Rant. Rant
yeah,
showed up and played with us.
That's right. We played with Rant a lot.
I started off really strong, and then after that, I just got destroyed in that game. You destroyed me on a few hands, and you did really well in that game. But I'm like an idiot. We walked to the MGM from the IP. For anybody who doesn't know that, it's the equivalent of walking from Rhode Island to Florida, okay? And I'm like, why am I doing this at 3 in the morning, okay? There are gangs out there. Every other parking lot was a hooker being arrested or a drug dealer being busted. And I'm like, I got like $500 in my pocket. What am I doing? I'm stupid. But that was the only reason why I knew what a hooker looked like, because I saw them all getting arrested with their hands, you know. I was like, oh, my God, hookers are hitting on Scott, and they're not hitting on me. I felt so, you know, deprived.
Now, admit it, as much as you hated that walk back, and I didn't enjoy my walk either as I saw some guy urinating outside the Bellagio. Please, even the Bellagio is not immune to these people.
Well, he saw the fountain, you know, that big fountain display and got inspired,
yeah,
you know.
He wanted to do his own little show. It had to come, yeah. Right.
Didn't come to music, but
As much as you hated that walk, you would prefer that walking to me driving you up.
Oh, my God.
Did you not?
Yeah, you know what? And then as soon as we get back to Florida, you're like Grandpa again. You know, we're going right into a green light today. I'm like, Scott, hit the gas. And no, you slow down and stop for the green light. And I'm like, if we were in Vegas, we'd have already been at the studio. You're crazy when we're in Vegas. You know, we get in the rental car, and not 4 minutes out of the rental car place, there's already you saying, right, what the hell's going on? You're already screaming at other cars, and you're darting in and out, slamming on the brakes. It must be because it's a rental car and you don't own it or something, but you are crazy in Vegas.
Yeah, you know, I guess, you know, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, except when it makes it on the podcast.
Oh, my God. So. You are a maniac on the street
now,
in Vegas.
You have to admit, I was not a maniac, though, in the lovely Imperial Palace parking garage.
No, and then that's,
there
yeah.
There were grandmas that were honking
I'm
at
like,
me.
I'm like, dude, just park. I can't fit in there. The car's too long. What do you mean the car's too long? It's a standard parking space. I can't turn it. Just park right there. No, we had to walk like an extra 25 miles total over the entire trip because of how far away Scott would park away from the elevators or the casinos. Because he couldn't park. He has no idea how to park. It drives me crazy.
All right, now I'm going to defend myself here a little
bit. You can't.
One, it was a Dodge Charger. It's a very large car, all right? Very large. But two, this parking garage,
it was bad,
was designed on take your kid to work day. Some little kid came in with his Legos, and dad was working on something, and the kid built a parking garage out of Legos, and then some other guy, some executive came up and go, Jerry, build it. I love it. That's a great design. It was the worst built parking garage.
Yeah, the columns
ever.
And the columns too, like butted into the spaces.
And so every other space.
Every other space was a column, so it was ridiculous. But still, I mean, the mere fact that the car could fit in that space means that you should have been able to park there, and you just couldn't do it. It just drove me crazy. You got to be able to park in those spots, man.
Yeah, yeah.
If you took the driver's test and they took you into that lot, you would fail. All right, you would fail. But they know nothing. That pales in comparison to how bad the elevators were at this place too.
Wow. And we admitted that our lovely $6 a day deal was going to be what we got, what we paid for.
Yes.
And we specifically mentioned it to the checkout lady, or check-in lady. We don't want to get stuck on those slow-ass elevators. She's like, oh, okay, no, we'll get you a room on the other bank of elevators.
Yep. Not only were these elevators slow, but they were out all the time. They had like one elevator working for 17 floors. Every time you got in, it was like 25 people packed in like sardines, and it was hot. The air conditioning wasn't working. I was like, man, we should have sprung for like $7 a day or something, man, because this is brutal. It was absolutely brutal.
And but, you know, the other thing, too, about the IP that I found humorous was, you don't go to Vegas, you hear about the lovely pool parties at the Hard Rock and the Mandalay Bay with all the hotties and the tan guys. I'm like, all right, I got up one morning, I'm like, I'm going to get down to the IP pool and check out the hotties. I get down there, I am the hottie.
You're the hottie, as I was going to say.
Do you know how disgusting a pool party is when Scott Long is the slimmest guy there, including kids? I tell you, you know, the biggest loser is running around the country casting. No, just go to the IP pool. Save your money. You'll get everybody you need the IP pool. Oh, my God.
Well, it was a great trip, though, and we did a lot of cool things. And we saw a lot of the members of the Antiope Nation, which is really good. And, you know, it went by pretty quick, too. It was a pretty fast trip, you know.
Yeah, and then we ran into people in some interesting spots as well, too. And we'll end the story with what I think was one of the funnier stories. We were hanging out with our good friend Lee Childs and Nikki Numbers.
Yeah, Nikki and Brancato.
And had a good time having drinks with them at the one of the Rio bars. You made a great verbal gaffe that we cannot repeat on our family show. But they're like, hey, let's go have dinner. And, you know, we had a meeting with somebody a little bit later. So we're like, oh, man, sorry we can't make it. But we'll catch up with you later, Lee, all right?
And to preface this, too, we were having fun at Lee's expense a little bit about his final table. So
yes,
let's preface
true.
It with that,
that's
too.
True.
So it's
he
pretty weird.
He made the final table, the main event, 2 years ago. And, you know, and we talked a lot. You know, we went out to dinner with he and Turley, went to the Palm, had a big 6-pound lobster, which was really cool.
Yeah.
And but we talked a lot about that final table and a lot about how he faced off against the eventual champion, Jerry Lang, in that very pivotal Queen-Queen versus Jack-Jack hand, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, sorry, Lee. I mean, we'd love to stay and eat, but we got to run. So we decided to catch a quick bite to eat at the Gold Coast Buffet.
Right next door.
You know, because I got the coupon book. Yeah,
the coupons, man, they saved us again this year.
Yeah, so it's like they pay you money to go to the Gold Coast, you know, right next door. So we walk in, we sit down, and we're chowing our food, and then all of a sudden you go, Scott, I think that's Jerry Yang. And I turned around, and here's a guy with a full tilt hat and some bling on. I'm like, I can't see. His back's turned to me. And you're like, no, it's Jerry Yang. It really is. He turns around, and you go, hey, Jerry. So Jerry, and of course, you've interviewed him before, so you strike up a conversation. And so Jerry Yang was in the booth right next to us at the Gold Coast freaking buffet.
And, you know, and it's not like it's a booth next to you as if like there's a barrier between us. I mean, literally, his ass was butted up against your ass, and you didn't know it was Jerry Yang. Yet another reason for you to have to watch poker on television, so you know you're eating, you know, your great Asian food buffet next to Jerry Yang. Now, here's the thing, is Jerry Yang is wearing a full tilt hat, and he's got the World Series of Poker main event champion bracelet on, and I'm thinking, you're at the Gold Coast buffet, buddy. You shouldn't be wearing that bracelet out here. It should be in a safe that's in a vault, you know, at the Bellagio, where, you know, Glenn, you know, Cooney and all those guys can rob you. But, no, he has it on his wrist, having, like, you know, watermelon.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, you're crazy, dude.
At a buffet where you can get a bottle of wine for $7.
Crazy.
Awesome.
He's crazy. But
particularly
then,
just minutes after we left Lee Childs.
And right after we were talking to him about how Jerry Yang outplayed him, and he's, you know, mad and And then, so we told him we couldn't have dinner with him. We dissed him. We couldn't have dinner with him because we had to go have dinner somewhere else. And it, we were just being cheap. But but we really had an appointment later on that night that we had to keep. So we wanted to make sure that the dinner was a quick buffet. And who we sit next to is his nemesis, Jerry Yang. Unbelievable.
And definitely check out the Annie Up Magazine Facebook fan page for my wonderful Pulitzer Prize winning shot of the empty booth where Jerry Yang had sat just minutes previously. I did not think to actually take a picture of, well, you know, Jerry actually in the booth, but there's a wonderful shot of the empty booth.
Yeah, so it was a great trip overall.
Yes.
A lot of stuff. And some other stuff came of it, too, that we'll probably talk about later on. But don't forget, next week, Annie Up National Bracelet winner, Wired Pair, otherwise known as Ray Foley, is going to be on the show via Skype. We saw him at the main event. We're not sure how he's doing right now because it's, you know, noon and we're in a studio. But he was doing okay, and we saw him last, and we're going to have him on the show next week, yep. So we're looking forward to that.
Mailbag, Hotline, Hand of the Week are all back, and brand new, different style Columbo, one-minute mystery.
Yeah.
Pretty exciting.
Something new, something sweet, going to mix up a little bit, because that's what a good poker player does. Changes gears, and that's what Columbo's going to do. So, new segment, and looking forward to it. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
Okay, here we are. We sound very good today. Oh, it's so nice to be back in the studio. Don't like the trip over, but it's nice just waking up and rolling out of bed doing your underwear. Okay. all right, we're good to go, I think.